Welcome to another G4 Guitar podcast. My name is David Hart and I am the founder and the program director of the G4 Guitar International Franchise Network. If you want to find out more information on G4 Guitar, please visit our website at g4guitarmethod.com. That's the letter G, the numeral 4, the word guitar, method, .com. And it's all one word. Today's topic is why great teachers are rare. Why is it that we don't see great teachers everywhere? Why do in any given lifetime, most of us have a dozen or more teachers, whether it be at school, whether it be at university, whether it be in our jobs, whether it be courses that we do. And when we think about how many of those teachers were truly great teachers, and you know, for some of us, maybe one or two, or if we're really lucky, we've had three great teachers through our life. For some people, they never had a great teacher. And that story is not uncommon for someone to say, well, I don't really know anyone who's really influenced me, who really taught me, who really knew what they were doing as a teacher. So why is it that great teachers are rare? Is it that our standards are too high? Do we think too much, expect too much from a teacher? Is it that we're not doing enough ourselves? Is it that we don't give enough? Which is probably part of the story. Maybe we expect too much of teachers. But the reality is that a great teacher has this ability to take almost anyone and turn them into a great student. In other words, get consistently great results. And we see this. There are plenty of examples. You know, you do have to go looking for these examples. They're not everywhere because great teachers are rare. But there are enough examples for us to know that teachers do make a difference. A teacher is nothing more than a leader. So whether it be a teacher, someone who's teaching you directly, whether it be someone teaching you through a book, through some kind of leadership program, it could be a coach, it could be somebody at work, a trainer, a boss. Anyone can be a teacher. A teacher doesn't necessarily mean in a classroom with a group of people who are all learning. It can be anyone who really teaches us something, whether it be a lesson of life or whether it be actual practical skills. Someone who is teaching us something can be regarded as a teacher. So when I say teacher, I'm referring to anyone who's a coach, a mentor, a leader, really all of the above. Anyone who causes us to change and improve who we are, that's what I would consider a teacher. So you can put all of the above under that. So what I'm going to do in this talk is go through what I think are my top five reasons why great teachers are rare. And I'm going to start from number five and I'll end up on number one. So what we'll do is we'll work through those five, and what I'm going to do is explain each one in as much detail as I can, given the amount of time that we've got here. So let me start with my number five on my top five list, and that is most teachers don't plan. So this is a very common reason why I believe many teachers don't get that level of what I call a great teacher. In other words, without a plan, they don't really know what they're doing. And the idea of a plan is that when you put a plan together, the plan itself is not necessarily the be-all and end-all. It's not, you can't say the plan is what makes you successful, kids. It's not the plan, it's the execution of the plan. But the problem for many teachers is they don't have a plan to execute. So they're trying to execute something that doesn't actually exist. So what you need to do is create the plan. Great teachers have plans, but they don't necessarily follow the plan note for note, so to speak, or exactly as it is. They also know how to execute the plan. So think of it as a script or a song. If you think from a point of view of a musician playing a song, one person can play a melody or a song and another person can play it. One can play it with huge amount of emotion and passion and feel and just leaves you feeling, you know, chills go up your spine. Whereas somebody else can play it and you're like, oh, you need a lot of work on that. It doesn't do anything for me. And even though they're playing it technically okay, it still doesn't have what we would consider. And this is the execution of the piece, and that's really important. So you do need to have the plan. So in other words, the musicians need to know what they're playing. Most great musicians don't just improvise over nothing. They don't just make something up on the spot. They generally, even if you look at great jazz musicians, typically they're improvising over an established melody or a tune. They love playing standards, and then they improvise around the standard. So they like to know the melodies there. But sometimes it they go so off that you can't even recognize the original song. You can't even hear the melody, the original melody. But they're using that as a template. So it's the same with great teachers. You can use the plan, and as you become better and better and more experienced at teaching, I don't advise this in the beginning, the same with musicians, stick to the song, stick to how it is to be played according to the notes and according to the original recording, and improvise as you become skillful and as you start to understand and you can play the piece really well, then start to move off it, then start to bring in your own style. So the same of great musicians is the same of great teachers. Start by learning other people's systems and methods of teaching. That should be your starting point. And you can see this in almost all types of mastery. Most mastery is built on studying great people who came before you, studying whether you're an artist, studying great artists, whether you're a musician, whether you are a business person, whether you are an athlete, let's say you're a swimmer and swimming the Olympics. You study those who came before. You study their technique and see what they did. And then once you kind of understand what they're doing, then you can start to think about how you can improve on that. What they talk about a lot, and this is a theory that's been running around in recent times that I've been reading about, where the innovators, the real innovators, are the people who actually are on the cutting edge. But to get to the cutting edge, you've got to do all the hard work first. You've got to go through all these layers by learning from the masters that came before you. Study, 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 study those guys. If we take something, I think of martial arts, think of someone like Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee studied Wing Chun, was one of the areas he studied. He studied karate and all different types of martial arts. But what he did is he studied the masters, and then he started to develop his own style, the Bruce Lee style. So people will look at him and go, Bruce Lee had his own style. Yes, he did in the end, but he didn't start out that way. He started by studying other people. Jimi Hendrix was the same. Jimi Hendrix studied the blues masters of the day. He knew blues inside out, upside down, and then he brought all that together, especially with the electric guitar and the innovation that was going on at that time, and he took it to the cutting edge. He was even mixing it up with people like Miles Davis. Even Miles Davis was looking at Hendrix and getting ideas from Hendrix. So they were kind of, throwing things back and forth. So you had these masters. Miles Davis himself, of course, great master, amazing master of his instrument. And so these guys, what they did is they studied the masters, and then they lived on the cutting edge. So then they created their style. Now, this is what I believe causes a lack of great teaching, is that you don't plan. You don't start with a plan. Start with a plan. It's better to start with somebody else's plan than no plan at all. Even if you want to make up your own plan, that's great. But it's good to study masters' plans, study other people's plans that have proven to work, that have been successful for other people. Study those plans and then work from there. That's what I did. That's how I came up with the G4 guitar method. The G4 guitar method is really a collection of master teachers and courses and ideas from businesses, all sorts of things. Things like the checklists, which I got from the aviation industry, watching pilots and the safety records of pilots and how they very rarely crash. Thanks for that. We want to know that we can get on a plane and fly safely, and it's the safest mode of transport, much safer than anything, much, much safer than driving cars. And the reason that is quite simply because they use a checklist system. It's not the only reason, but it's the main reason that they are able to do these checks and balances and know that the plane is safe. They've done all the things that they're supposed to do, ready to take off, ready to fly, land, etc. So plan. That's the first thing that I want to talk about. So the second thing, we'll call this number four on my top five. Number four is practice. One thing that they don't do, that most teachers don't do, that great teachers do is practice. So again, let's look at great musicians. How many great musicians do you know, are you aware of, that got there without any practice? Now, some of them might not practice later in their career. That happens. I've heard of that. But they certainly practiced in their early career. I think you would be very, very hard-pressed to find a great musician, someone who you could truly call great in every sense of the word as a musician, who didn't practice. Now,
I like to draw, and I think you can understand this because hopefully you're a musician and you're listening to this. There's a distinction between what we would call a great musician and a famous popular musician. Famous popular musicians are not necessarily great musicians. So I'd like to draw the distinction between that. Even some great artists who create some amazing, kind of interesting styles are not necessarily great musicians. They're great artists. And they deserve the respect and they deserve to have their place. But let's not confuse that with what a great musician is, as far as someone who's technically great, can play their instrument and really execute well on their instrument. And so if we sort of take that in mind, they practice. Now, even the person who is the artist, even the person who's the performer, I recently read a book by Gene Simmons from Kiss, and look, some people really love him, respect him. And when I was a teenager, I was into Kiss. That was a phase that I went through. But I wouldn't accuse Gene Simmons of being the world's greatest bass player. I don't think he would even accuse himself of being that. I don't think he makes that claim. He's a bass player and he's right for Kiss. But what he's really good at, he's a showman. He's an amazing showman. And he really practiced his showmanship. So it was the practice of his showmanship. As he said, we go out there to blow people's minds. That was what we wanted to do. We wanted to put on the most amazing live show. So all the antics and all the extras are really what they do. That's what they're good at. What they're good at is putting on a show. And let's face it here, a lot of people aren't going to appreciate high levels of musicianship. It's like wine, you know, I don't know one wine from the next. If you give me a $5,000 bottle of wine and give me a $10 bottle of wine, I wouldn't be able to tell you which is which. So I can't appreciate the difference. And it's the same with musicians. People who are not trained musicians, who haven't spent years either listening to music or playing it, aren't going to necessarily really know the difference between these top musicians and, you know, average musicians. So I can appreciate the fact that when people go and see a really good show where the musicianship is not necessarily at that high level, they can still go, wow, that was an amazing show, because they're not looking for that awesome musicianship. What they're looking for, what they're aware of, more to the point, is what a great show is. The fact that this guy's throwing, you know, flames out his mouth and he's throwing things in the air and he's get up is like amazing, and the whole light show and everything. So let's not get confused between those two. So we've talked about number five, which was planning, and then number four, which was practice. So these are two things great teachers do. So if you want to be a great teacher, definitely need to do those two. So number three on my top five list is research. And this is something that, you know, when I talk to teachers, I don't find them doing much research. When I talk to great teachers, there's a very big difference with great teachers. Now, to give you an idea, in companies, you know, and we've all heard the bad news about CEOs, how they're these guys sitting on top of companies getting millions of dollars while the workers down the bottom are flat out getting enough money to pay their rent each week. This sort of scenario happens, and there is corruption within those organizations and businesses because of the way they're structured. But most of them are not like that. And it's something to keep in mind, is that most people in most businesses and most things are actually doing good things. There's a small percentage that make it look bad, and that can happen in most industries, but it happens in these big corporations. But most of the CEOs who are in corporations got there deservingly. They went, they spent years, they said something like the average CEO has been within their job, so to speak, in their avenue, getting to that position for 25, 30 years. So for most of them, it took a long time to become a CEO of a big company and to be earning the millions of dollars. But what they found with these particular CEOs compared to, they found the average, and this is an American study, the average American reads about one book a year, believe it or not, and this is the average. Now, what happens, what that means is that most people are probably not reading any books. And I'm not talking about books on, you know, Harry Potter or something like that. I'm talking about books about non-fiction, something to do with business or their area that they're working in. So someone, let's say someone works in a bank, how many banking books did they read? How many financial books did they read? Probably not many. And they're working in a bank. They're working in a financial institution, yet they're not studying the business at all. They're not knowing anything about the business. People who work in retail sales, how many sales books have they read? How many sales courses have they done? How much do they know about the retail industry? How much do they know about their industry? You will find that in most cases, they know very little and they don't read books on their subject. But there are some people who do, who help to beef up the average. But one book per year is what they calculated the average, even less in some cases. So what are CEOs of these companies do? They read on average more than 50 books a year. So you can see there's a 50-to-1 ratio of how much knowledge they're taking in. In other words, research. You don't have to do the research necessarily to benefit from research. You just have to read the research to find out about what's going on in an industry, what people are doing, what are the new techniques, what are the better ways of, you know, you think about guitar, what are the better ways for playing guitar? What's the latest thing? What are the latest techniques? Are there better strings out there? Are there, you know, better guitar designs? Are there better amps? Depending on what you're doing, what your industry is, then you're wanting to do research. If you don't do research as a teacher, if you're not researching what are the latest teaching techniques, even you don't even have to research the latest teaching techniques. In fact, I would say that 90% of the knowledge of great teaching has been there for a long time. It's not new. And I'm talking 90% is not new. It's just what's out there. But you won't know it all unless you go looking for it. It's so if you could be a teacher, you could say, I've been teaching for 20 years or 30 years, but have you been learning about teaching? Have you been researching teaching? Have you been reading the top books? Can you name me at least half a dozen top books on teaching? Do you know which are the top books on teaching? So these are the things that you need to do. Now, you can do your own research. Granted, that can happen. But again, a lot of teachers don't take an approach of research to their teaching. They actually just go through the process. And again, we can associate it with any job. Let me use an example of, say, a taxi driver. And there are taxi drivers. The best taxi drivers will fit into this kind of scenario that I'm going to talk about. So taxi drivers, some of them will get in their taxi and they learn the essentials of driving the taxi. They know what the meter is and they know how to follow a map or how to type it into the GPS. And that's it. That's all they do. And so what happens is the passenger gets in the taxi and they say, where do you want to go? They type it into the GPS and off they go. They get there safely and they give the amount of money to the person in the taxi. They get the money and they're done. Now, how is it that one taxi driver can, and I'm going to give you a real example here, how is it that the one, and let's say most taxi drivers, will take home however many $100 a week? Like, you know, let's say an average taxi driver takes home $600 or $700 a week. A good taxi driver takes home $1,000 a week because they get some tips or they're just more efficient in their driving. So how is it that some taxi drivers do that, and then there's one taxi driver who's actually one of the wealthiest guys in the world today? How did one taxi driver become one of the richest guys in the world? I'll tell you how. Because what he did is he used his taxi as a way of researching how to get the most out of his taxi driving. So while he was researching, he was understanding, and what he was doing was he was a taxi driver on Wall Street. So he was actually talking to all these Wall Street traders, learning about Wall Street. And then he ended up becoming a Wall Street trader himself through what he learned through the knowledge. So his real intention at some point, I don't know if it was when he first started driving taxis, but at some point his intention was to become a Wall Street trader. And he realized that through his taxis and picking up guys coming in and out of Wall Street, he could learn a lot. So he was researching via his job. Now, that's an example of, you know, someone who was seeking wealth within the stock market, if you like. But even as a taxi driver, there are taxi drivers who earn many, many more times than what the average taxi driver does, and they do it through understanding where their best places to be to pick up passengers, what time of day, where they're going to get the best rides. They also learn how to talk to people, how to communicate well with the people who get in their taxis so that they can then get bigger tips. And they may even get repeat business. You imagine if you're a good taxi driver, you get on well with people. I know that I've ridden plenty of taxis in my time. And if the taxi driver's good, I'll go, look, give me your card because I want you next time. So that's what happens is great taxi drivers will never be left for a ride. They'll always have someone. And then if they're real smart, they'll hire another taxi driver, and they will be, you know, running a taxi driving business. But that's another story. But really what I'm telling you here is research, research, research. Keep trying to improve what you do as a teacher, and you will increase your value. Your value naturally goes up the better you become at what you do. People naturally feel that you are worth more, that you're more valuable. So they're willing to pay you more. They're more committed. You get better results. And everybody wins. And it's not just about you making more money. It's about students, your clientele, actually being happier and more satisfied with the service that you're offering, getting more value out of what you're offering. All right. Let's now go on to number two, which is invest. Most teachers don't invest. What do I mean by invest? In other words, they don't actually... And this could go a little bit to the research, but they don't invest money into doing any courses on teaching. They don't invest money into buying books and learning. They don't invest any money into online courses. And they just don't invest into to understanding the business of teaching if they're in business, if you're a guitar teacher with it, your own business. They don't invest in themselves. You are your greatest asset. It doesn't matter if I lost all my money tomorrow, if everything just suddenly disappeared and I was absolutely broke. It wouldn't matter because you can't take away what I've learned. And I always look at my greatest investment as my education. I know that when I invest money into an education, that's something that will stay with me. It's something that I can use again and again and again. The value, you know, I'll say to someone, hey, I've just spent $10,000 on doing this course. I'm going overseas and I'm going to do this course. It'll take me a month. And they're going, are you crazy? What's wrong with you? You know, like $10,000, think of what you could do with $10,000. Why don't you buy a house with it? Or why don't you do this or do that? They don't understand the investment of education. They don't appreciate the investment of education. That $10,000, in some cases, will be a waste of money. Don't get me wrong here. Every single course that I've invested in hasn't paid off. But I can tell you what, the ones that have paid off in massive amounts of money. There's one course I did, which was with a guy who I fully endorse, a guy named Jay Abraham, who's from the US. It cost me $4,000, I think the course was at the time. And what I got out of his course set me on a whole different path and opened my mind to many things that I was unaware of. And I can't, you know, I don't even know the guy personally. I worked with him for those 4 days. These were long days, by the way, 12-hour days I was working with him. Him and, you know, there was a group of us there. And so there I was for this intense workout, 4 days, plus obviously coming off that, I was going over all the notes and then I reviewed them again for, you know, at least for the next year or two. And I still review them to this day. But what I've got out of that investment, I can't explain it. Many times, hundreds of times, the return on the investment of that education, and it'll keep serving me really probably until the day that I retire or die or whatever. It's something that is absolutely invaluable. So I can look at that and go, okay, I've got hundreds of thousands of dollars back on my $4,000 investment, and in the end, I'll probably get millions out of it. And then I can look at, okay, I spent $10,000 here, complete waste of money, didn't get anything out of it. But hey, it doesn't matter because I know for every course that I pay for, there'll be one in maybe, you know, one in three or one in five that will actually pay off big time. So I'm not that worried. Most of them actually pay themselves off, by the way. They at least give me a return. They at least give me a different perspective sometimes. They at least open my mind to things. So investing is this number two on my list here, but it's one of the biggest sins of teachers is they do not invest in their education. You take school teachers, let's just have a look at that for instance. School teachers who are working with our kids every day, who are, you know, have these careers sometimes for 30, 40, 50 years teaching kids, and they do a dip ed is like 1 year extension on an art degree. They go to uni for 3 or 4 years and they come out and that's it. They don't do anything beyond that. They don't research anymore. They don't learn anymore. They don't go beyond that. So there's no investment into their future education. And I don't blame them. I blame the whole system. You know, schools should be having these reinvestment programs into the teachers that they already have, where teachers get these extended courses, or they have to go back to uni for a month every year to do more study. It should be part of what they do. So investment is a big thing. So if you're a teacher of any kind, even if you are a school teacher, don't expect the school to pay for it. It's nice. Invest in yourself. Go and invest in yourself and become an even better school teacher, because the odds are you're just going to increase your position within the education system if that's what you want. But if you go out and be and teach on your own, start your own business, open a private teaching facility of some description, then you're going to be much more valuable if you invested in yourself. Okay, big drum roll. Let's have a look at number one. Number one reason that great guitar teachers are rare, and I can absolutely testify to this because I interview so many guitar teachers mostly, but the number one reason is they blame their students. So I'll say that again. The number one reason is that they blame their students. They don't actually take responsibility for what they're doing as teachers. And anyone who knows me knows that I harp on this subject quite a bit. We need to be responsible for our students. We need to say, okay, I'm accountable in one way, shape, or form. There's something that I'm not doing here. Now, what this does is, are you 100% in every case responsible for the students who come into your orbit that come under you? No, you're not. We're never 100% responsible for anyone or anything. People are responsible for themselves. So I want to make this very clear that I'm not saying that in every single case you are 100% responsible for your students. What I am saying is that most teachers don't take their fair share. So in other words, what they do is they tend to just look at the students who are doing well for whatever reason, whether it be the student's self-motivated, the student's just a good kid because they've got good parents, or they just were born that way. Genetically, they're just predisposition that way. Whatever the reason, teachers take credit for that student doing well. That's my student. I helped them with that exam. I gave them the information and therefore they're doing well. These students over here are not doing well. Not my problem, not my fault. They're just bad kids. They're just bad seeds. It's not me. So we can't take credit over here and then dismiss over here that we're not responsible. We have to take it all. We have to say, okay, well, the students who are doing well, if half my students aren't doing well, let's just say as a round number, if half my students aren't doing well and the other half are doing, from okay through to really good, then it's probably not a lot to do with me. It's probably, I'm not responsible for how well those kids are doing. Where over here, the kids who aren't doing well, am I responsible for them? Well, I will say yes. And that's what this whole point is about, is that if you can assume that you are responsible and you just take it for granted that you are responsible for how well your students do, then you will do more in every other point. And that's the point here, is that point number one is that if you stop blaming your students and take responsibility, then you'll go back through and go, well, I need to invest more in my own teaching. I need to know more about my teaching, because if there are teachers out there, if there's any evidence of teachers out there who are having success with teaching any student, who can take on classes and read the book Teach Like a Champion by Doug Lemov, Lemov, and you'll see a great example of this. Look at what he's done with his work. But what he's done, just to give you a quick idea, is that he's looked at teachers who are succeeding against all the odds. They're in schools where the kids shouldn't be doing well at all, and yet here are these teachers who got classrooms full of kids who are all doing well, who are all exceptional students. So if there are teachers out there who can do it, it means it's possible, and it means the teacher plays a role. It means that you can't blame the student. You can't dismiss it as purely the student. So that means if you go back and invest in yourself, invest in your education, because you assume that there's something that you're not doing, that while you're stuck in the blame zone, you're not going to invest in yourself because you don't think it's you. You don't think there's anything to invest in. There's nothing to improve. You're perfect. Why would you go and change? It's not you, it's the students. So by looking at yourself and investing in yourself, you're going to improve your teaching. Again, if you take responsibility, then you're going to research. You're going to want to understand why. What is it that I need to do? What are the things that I'm not understanding about my teaching? Why aren't I getting results from my students? Not who do I blame? It's what am I doing that needs to be done differently in order? And that's where the research. You'll start researching more. And of course, you'll practice because you'll want to be better at what you do. You understand the reason I'm not succeeding is because I don't have the skills yet. So I need to practice those skills. I need to get better and better at my teaching. So practice, practice, practice. And of course, you're going to plan better because you're going to be thinking, okay, I've now invested in my education. I've got the information that I need. I'm now going to research and look closer at what needs to be done correctly. I'm then going to practice those skills, get better and better at them, and then I'm going to plan how I'm going to conduct my lessons. So you can see how it all ties in together, that it starts with that number one, which is the blame. So if you don't blame your students, if you assume complete responsibility and go from there, but like I said, it doesn't mean you're 100% responsible all the time. Sometimes that responsibility is to take on, I don't have the skills or capabilities or the ability to communicate with this particular student. There's a brick wall there. There's just everything I've tried is not working. I don't know what I'm researching. I'm investing in my education. I'm practicing, I'm planning, but nothing I do seems to work. So perhaps the best solution for this student for the moment is to refer them on to somebody else. And that should be your last resort, of course, but it's something that great teachers will do in the end if they have to. But most great teachers don't actually get to that point. What happens before that is either the student turns around, changes somehow because the teacher has really gone through these, or the student leaves off their own bat. And that's what happens sometimes. Sometimes the old saying is the teacher will appear when the student is ready. And sometimes the student is not ready. So, and I've had a few students like that, of course, where they're just not ready. It doesn't matter. But I don't take that personally. I just understand that the student recognized the worst student is the student who's not learning, who's not respecting you, who's not following what you're asking them to do, but it keeps coming. They keep turning up each week. That's the worst kind of student because it means that nothing's happening. It's a lose-lose situation. You need to turn that situation around. Okay, so I'll just quickly review that and then we'll end it there. So I'll go, number five was plan your lessons. Number four was practice. Number three was research. Number two was invest. And number one was, of course, don't blame your students, take responsibility. Okay, so thank you for your time. If you're interested in learning more about G4 Guitar, you can visit our website at g4guitarmethod.com. That's the letter G, the numeral 4, the word guitar, the word method, all one word, .com. Thank you for listening, and make sure you tune in to our next podcast. Bye-bye.